Hello, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Guns and Yellow Ribbons. It is a bank holiday weekend. Some of us have availed of the hospitality in our local pubs, and some of us are Danish. They don't have a bank holiday. We are going to look at the Bournemouth victory and look ahead to our game coming up against Manchester United. We're hoping for a City slip-up. But hey, listen, let's talk Arsenal.
Get ready for the world's greatest Arsenal podcast. Welcome to another podcast by Guns and Yellow Ribbons. Enjoy the show.
Good evening, lads. Welcome back to another podcast. Wow, what a last couple of weeks I've had. Been over to Ireland. I've got a cap. And I've got some rancheros. Now, the Irish people on here will understand what rancheros are. Rancheros are beautiful. You've got to try them. They're great, Chris. We're not sponsored or anything like that, but I love them. Trevor, thank you for filling in quite a lot for me over the last couple of weeks. It's been a great help. I know I was on last Monday and we couldn't do Friday, but you've done the preview shows and everything else. Good weekend. I'm going to take this hat off. Oh.
Good. Oh, put it back on. We can see less of your head.
So great weekend of football. Trevor, how have you been doing?
Yeah, all right. I've had a couple of beers today, but only a couple. So I've been a good boy. Had a magical weekend at the football. Great day on Saturday at the game. Can't remember what I did yesterday now, but it involved beer, I think. So, yeah, I've had a very decent weekend and a very decent performance from the Arsenal, I thought, against a side that have been in very good form recently.
Indeed, indeed. Dale, welcome back. You're filling in for Dan. Dan's got lots of stuff going on, busy with work and everything else, and you've gladly filled in his footsteps. You've been in the pub this afternoon, haven't you?
That'd be rude not to have a bank holiday, wouldn't it? But I don't want to keep talking about it too much. You'll make Alex jealous. It's not a bank holiday over there. So, no, we've all been hard at work, Alex, whilst you have as well. So don't you worry about what Fergus is saying, mate.
Alex, yeah. Have you been drafted?
Have I been drafted?
Yeah, it looks like you've been joined the army or something like that with a haircut like that.
Yeah, I mean, I handed in my exam on Friday and it was nice and sunny outside. So I thought I need to get my hair nice and short for the summer. So, yeah, got a nice buzz cut on Friday.
Yeah, it looks like Biff from the fifth squadron of the American Air Force or something like that, don't you think?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Trevor, we had a great day on Saturday. It was an early kickoff. They're not the best kickoffs in the world, but we met up with Hannah and her mum, and we had Rich and some. It was a nice, good feeling around the place. It was a bit strange getting in early and getting 6 pints of cider in.
Yeah, well, I was down in London really early because I had an early train, so I thought I wanted to get down, had a bit of breakfast. Had a mooch around, and then I think I was the first one in the ground at 10:30 when it opened. Went straight to the bar and bought 4 pints of cider, and and then it all went into a bit of oblivion, really, mate. It was people started coming in the ground at our normal crowd that we get now, round by block 5 there. I sit at my table with my mates there, and you stand up and sing your songs with all the boys, and it was just a good atmosphere. And I'll tell you what, Fergus, I really thought that for a 12:30 kickoff, it wasn't too bad, the atmosphere, mate.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
Sounded good on a telly.
Yeah. So that was it. Then that was it. I managed to squeeze 7 pints in before kickoff, which was...
you mean two, Trev? Two?
Yeah. No, 7, because they don't count before kickoff. They only count after kickoff.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So, yeah.
We found out the reason for Trev's 2 pint thing. It was from your 1981 original travel pass. You were only allowed 2 cans of beer on the train, Trev.
You were, well, officially you were, yeah, when the travel club was in existence. And you went on the away trains, you were limited to two cans of beer that you could take on the train. Most people took a few more than two, but that was the rule anyway. That was the that was what you were meant to take.
Yeah. Dale, you didn't get down to the game. You watched from afar. You had a football tournament with your son. How did he get on?
Yeah, really good, mate. Really, really good. It was their first real tour in Vegas. I can honestly say I won't be going back there again in a hurry. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. But yeah, thankfully my tickets were put to good use. Obviously, Trev had my tickets, so I know they were put to very, very good use. But yeah, watched every minute of the game from the side of the football pitch. Didn't miss a minute. So yeah, really enjoyed it.
What was tragic over the last couple of weeks is young Daniel, the 14-year-old boy, killed not too far away from where I live in Hainault in Essex, northeast London. But this debate about where it was. But the club done a really nice tribute before kickoff, before North London Forever and everything else. They put a picture of Daniel up on the big screen. And subsequently later on, the fans done this. Let me just play this little video. This is from my seat in the North Bank. Daniel, Trevor, you were going to say you wanted to have a little bit of a chat on this point.
Yeah, I was very humbled, Fergus, by the Arsenal Football Club before the game and by the Arsenal fans in the 14th minute at how well we look. We made sure that we shared that poor boy's family's, you know, hurt and grief. We don't share it the same, but every Arsenal fan in that stadium. And I was proud of the Ashburton Army lads because no one made them get a banner printed. They just did it because they're football fans and they felt that they needed to do something. Every fan in the stadium applauded. And I was very humbled and I was very happy to call myself a football fan when that was going on. And, you know, I'm not going to drift off the subject, but there's a lot of people out there in the media and on the television and in the newspapers who make themselves out to be so-called do-gooders and they run football fans into the ground. And I would urge everybody to look at what happened there. Football fans, old, young, black, white, brown, yellow, we've all got massive hearts, right, football fans? Massive hearts, and they're not afraid to show it. And I, for one, was proud of every football fan in that stadium when that happened, and I was proud of my club for what they did before the game. And to reiterate, we share that family's grief, right? We don't share it in the same way they do. A family is a family, but we all shared that grief. Everybody was felt so sad when that was going on. So I hope the family are getting help, and I hope they're gonna somehow feel better. I don't know how, and be able to move on. But horrible, Fergus, horrible.
Yeah, really nice touch that the ball was kicked out of play, and then the players took the moment as well to clap along. Listen, moving on slightly from there, it's a difficult point to move on from, but like Arsenal qualified for the Champions League by beating Spurs, so we're back into the Champions League guaranteed for next season. And we faced Bournemouth. Arsenal were unbeaten in 8 of the recent Premier League meetings, winning 7 of them, only drawing against Manchester City. And Bournemouth, their only win in the last 16 matches against Arsenal was in January 2018. They've drawn 2 and lost 12. And Arsenal won 4-0 away in this reverse fixture in the Vitality Stadium. Goals from Saka, Odegaard, Havertz and Ben White. Let's talk about the lineups first of all. Alex, talk to me about this lineup, unchanged in 3 games. And to be honest, bar party, I think it's unchanged in probably 5 or 6 games.
Yeah, it seems like he's found his favourite 11 players now that the whole squad is fit now, apart from Jurrien Timber still getting back to match fitness. But yeah, ever since Partey's come back, he's been in the squad and he's been in the starting lineup. And it also seems like he prefers Trossard at the moment. And I mean, now that we've only got the league to focus on, there's no need for rotation or And you can see with the substitutions as well, in the last couple of games, he's only made two substitutions quite late in the game as well. So, yeah, it seems like these are the 11 players he trusts the most at the moment. And, I mean, rightly so, because we've been very good since the Villa game. And I think it's really clicked in the midfield with Partey and Rice and Odegaard. And, yeah, I mean, it showed in the game how well Rice plays when Partey is in the squad, and it allows him to get a bit further up in the pitch. And by the way, happy birthday to Lyndon in the chat. It's his birthday today.
Yes, his birthday today. Happy birthday, Lyndon. Dale, the lineup was Raya, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Tomiyasu, Rice, Partey, Odegaard, Saka, Trossard and Havertz. Alex talks about how Rice seems to, like, you know, expand his play with having Partey on the pitch. You know, what's your thoughts on that? And what do we do with Partey next season?
We had this conversation a few weeks ago, you may remember. And I think at that point there, I said Partey's playing for his future. I still cannot answer that question. We've still got a couple more games to go. As it stands at the moment, I'm very happy with Thomas Partey's performances. I think when you don't play somebody like Partey with Declan Rice, like we did in the Villa game, it shows, and we were overrunning midfield at the time. I think Partey allows Declan Rice to push forward, and I think he brings the best out of Rice. And I think his goal towards the end, we'll touch on that shortly, it shows kind of how advanced he can get when given that that freedom when he's got that defensive cover behind him. So I was quite happy with Partey, and I wasn't surprised by the lineup at all.
Trev, finally on the lineup, comfortable with it, happy with it. Would you have tweaked it in any way?
Do you know what, Ferg? I'm just sat here, right, and I'm still thinking about that poor lad and how it happens in London. Oh God, man, I feel so sorry for them. Sorry, I'm going to move on. Right, I'm going to move on. God, I've got it in my head. You know, them families don't deserve that, what happened to that poor young man. And it's upset me. It's really, it really upset me. But anyway, going back we have to move on, right? We have to move on. Going back to the lesser important subjects of the game of football that was played. I've written loads of notes down here, and Alex has actually used most of them for me. Exactly right. I think that I noticed that he's only used two subs, and late in the game, in the last couple of games, I think it's at the stage of the season now where, as Alex says again, he's found his favourite team, Arteta, and there's two or three games to go, and he's going to run them into the ground. You know, he's going to run them into the ground. He's not going to bring subs on that weaken the side just for the sake of rotation or for the sake of saving energy of his players, which is what he's done all season. I mean, if you look at our subs for the weekend, take for the game against Bournemouth, taking away Jesus and Martinelli, who came on, with the greatest respect, none of the subs on the bench would improve what we had on the field, you know? And I think Arteta is now thinking, well, we've got to go for it. You know, we've got to win every game and hope that other results go our way, as we're going to discuss, I know. So, yeah, I was very happy with the lineup. I think that it's clearly obvious to me now that a fantastic player like Declan Rice seems to be that little bit better, even better when Partey's on the field, I think. I think the Partey gives Rice maybe a little bit more space to get around the field and not worry about what's happening behind him. So I think that Partey and Rice are going to be really special. I didn't think, well, we said it earlier in the season, didn't we, Ferg? We said we didn't think Rice, at one stage, Partey was going to ever play for the club again, you know? And he's come back, and from the way he's playing now, and the qualities he's showing, I'd be more than happy for him to stay with us for another season. Absolutely. And if we sign Jorginho on another contract as well, which is the third part of that triangle, I'm very happy with that. Very happy with it, mate.
Listen, the first half had lots of opportunities for us to score. There were many talking points. We had 11 shots in the opening 20 minutes of the match. The joint most in a Premier League game by any side this season. But the biggest talking point, aside from, like, you know, the respect which we talked about, was the tackle on Saka. So there was this tackle on Saka, which wasn't even awarded a yellow card. And when you see the damage that was done to the guy's leg, Saka's leg, it's just, it's really harsh. It's really, really harsh. Who's coming in? Who's coming in on that one? Del, do you want to come in on Saka's tackle?
When I first saw it, obviously I had the benefit of seeing replay after replay after replay on the TV. I was convinced they were going to give a red card for that. I was convinced. I was like, yep, they're going to go to VAR. VAR is going to check that. They're going to. I thought they might go to the referee and say, "Can you go check the screen?" as a minimum, if they weren't going to give a red card, but they didn't, and I was absolutely shocked. I was telling people at the side of the pitch, because I was at the tournament, saying Bournemouth down to 10, floodgate's going to open. But then when they didn't, I was absolutely gobsmacked. I didn't see the gash on his leg until the end of the game. At that point there, I was, shocking. I mean, look at that. I mean, we see these tackles week in, week out get punished in the Premier League. Every single week, you can point out at least one tackle where it's like this. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not going to sit there and suggest there's a media bias towards Arsenal. I'm not going to sit there and suggest we're victims of referees, but it does seem to be that whenever we get decisions like that, they do so happen to be against us. And I wonder if that was against anybody else, would that have been a red card? I think the answer is yes.
Alex, David Coote, not my favourite referee. I think he's probably one of the worst referees in the league. And I think maybe, as Del said there, there should have been more punishment to the player for making the foul on Saka. But it worked both ways. There was an incident later on with penalties, and there was an incident later on with Bournemouth as well, without getting into too much detail. I thought he didn't have a bad game, really, but that was a poor decision, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. I do think apart from that, we probably had the margins on our side from the ref, but yeah, that was a big miss from the ref, and the fact that he didn't even give a free kick in the situation shows that he didn't see the incident. So why wouldn't the VAR send him to the screen when he's clearly missed it? Because it should have been at least a yellow card if he'd seen it. I think we've had similar incidents in the last couple of games. I remember against Wolves where Havertz got a nasty tackle on him as well, where the ref didn't even see it and he didn't get sent to the screen. But yeah, again, it's just the inconsistency, because I think we've all seen the video of the red card Vieira got in the Burnley game early on in the season, where there's much less contact and a very similar situation. And yet there wasn't even a free kick in this game. So yeah, I mean, that's just poor from the ref. But I think in regards to bias, I think we were quite lucky with some of the other situations in the game where he was on our side.
Trev, can VAR intervene in that incident? I thought they could only intervene in like mistaken identity, red cards, penalty decisions, clear and obvious mistakes. And normally with yellow cards and fouls like that, unless the referee calls it in, I don't think they can interfere, can they?
Oh, Ferguson, you know, it's no good asking me, mate, about VAR. You know how I am with it. Or maybe he can only intervene if he's given a yellow and they want him to upgrade it to a red. I know they've intervened on them occasions, but yeah, it was a bad one. Have you got that picture still handy, Ferg?
I do, yes, mate.
Of the tackle. Did you have one? Yeah. You see that? What? And I saw it watching the game and I was drunk. I thought to myself, a lot of high tackles, I'm not saying they're right, but they go near the ball. You know, they go just over the ball. But he's gone in high like that and he's not even anywhere near the ball, Ferg. He's not within a foot of the ball at any time while that is happening.
He's closer to his knee than he is the football.
I'm not saying he's done it on purpose, but, you know, if that can't be looked at, then the issue lies with the VAR, not the referee on the field, because as someone rightly says in the chat, you know, they all make mistakes. And I thought Coote did all right on, I thought we got a bit lucky, actually, with one or two decisions on the weekend. So we did all right with Coop. But if VAR can't intervene in a tackle like that, then they need to look at the rules for VAR. Nothing else, mate.
Can I add in there? They did check it. It was checked. VAR did check it and deemed it not to be a red card offence. So there's a chat.
There we go.
Yeah. So they did check it, and VAR can intervene. They can't issue yellow cards for VAR, but they can issue a red card if they believe it's a red card offence. However, the issue here, as I think it's Matthew D'Souza mentioned in the chat, there's no blame on the referee here. If the referee didn't see it, he can't give it. VAR is 100% at fault here. I'm not sure who was on VAR.
But there was enough time. Mike, there was enough time in that game.
Peter Banks.
And David England was fourth official, wasn't he? But there was enough time because Saka was down for some time, Trevor, because two players were wiped out at that point. Or was that the same incident?
I don't know. We've been put right by, anyway, by our friend Kev. You know what I mean? They can intervene. And if they had a look at that and didn't deem that as dangerous play, I don't know what is dangerous play. You know, we're going to have people on our backs if we're not careful, saying you're talking about everything that Bournemouth done, but Arsenal had a bit of a good day with the ref, you know. But having said that, we're Arsenal fans, so this is how we're going to talk, you know. And the fact of the matter is that was a very dangerous tackle, and Saka's been on the wrong end of a few for most of this season, and he's not coming off them very well at the moment, is he?
It's always Saka, isn't it?
He is targeted because he's like, you know, a threat, and people put a lot of people on him. Look, 45 minutes in, we dominated the game. And Trevor, you talked about, you know, we were fortunate. Kai Havertz was taken down by Mark Travers. Saka scores an excellent penalty. But let's talk about leading up to the penalty. Now, there was a lot talked on Match of the Day about it, about Havertz leaving the training leg. Is it a penalty? Can he do it? Some pundits are saying, yeah, he's done nothing wrong. Others are going, oh, it's not in the spirit of the game. I don't think he's done anything wrong, but it's definitely he's doing a Kai Havertz.
Fergus, listen, right? Listen, if that penalty is given against us, we are absolutely fuming. We are calling the referee a cheat. We're saying VAR's not done their job. It wasn't a penalty, right? And I'm an Arsenal fan. Havertz is clever at this, as we're discovering, as his confidence grows, we're discovering the things he can do. And he's dragged the leg. And even then, when he's dragged the leg, he's hardly got touched. It wasn't a penalty. If it had been given against us, I'd have been pulling what's left of me, a little bit of air out. I'd have been fuming. By the end of the day, we're Arsenal fans, so we take it, don't we?
We do. Dale, what's your view on this penalty?
I've got quite strong opinions on this. Is it a penalty in this day and age? Yes. I'm not saying I agree with it, but in this day and age, if somebody puts themselves in that situation and they leave the trailing leg, you take that trailing leg, you see those given week in, week out once again. I don't agree with it, but the way penalties have crept, the way this type of behaviour has been allowed to creep into the modern game, that's what makes it a penalty. For me, it's a very minimal contact. It's very clever by Kai Havertz. I don't think it's a penalty, but because the way football's been allowed to evolve over the last few years, and players know that if they leave their trailing leg out and they get brought down, it's a penalty. So I don't blame Kai for it. I think it's very clever by Kai Havertz. I blame football evolution over the last 3, 4, 5 seasons, which has allowed this sort of behaviour to creep in. I don't think it's a penalty, but in this day and age, I think it is a penalty. I'll take it.
You see, Arnie's got a great point, Ferg. Arnie's got a great point. And Kane has been doing it for years and years and years, leaving that leg behind and getting penalties. So, yeah, absolutely, Dal, and I agree, yeah.
Before you come in, Alex, just let's watch this by a guy I've grown to like. I didn't like him before. Mark Goldbridge, take the comment off a second, please, mate. And then we'll put this, and then I'll have you come in, Alex.
But deliberately to get the contact, it's not a penalty. And anybody who has played the game knows what he's done there. I can see why the referee on the pitch has given it, but VAR not turning it around, I don't understand the point in VAR anymore. That's my problem with it. Saka scores the penalty, 1-0 to Arsenal. Big goal for them. But look, I think going back to the conversation about the penalty, no problem with Arsenal getting the penalty. No problem with Havertz doing that. But if you've played the game, you know what he's done, because we've all done it. You see the keeper doesn't get the ball. You leave your foot there. You simulate the contact, you go down. It's simulation, and we've all done it. but unfortunately, the referee gives a penalty. I would rather we didn't have VAR, because I don't really get what the point of VAR is anymore. Should have been a red card for the Saka thing. And on the penalty, they should see what we see, which is Havertz has simulated that. If we're trying to cut out simulation, that's not a penalty. But what do they do? Oh, let's back the referee on the pitch.
Well, the point of VAR is to stop those situations that I used to face when I made a decision on here, got into the dressing room, looked at my phone and thought, oh my goodness, how have I missed that? That shouldn't happen now. The VAR's there as that safety net. But what I don't want is situations where, you know, there's some situations that could split opinion 60-40, not only in the public, for you guys, for the players, the coaches, also for the officials. And one VAR in one week will recommend a review, and in the same week, a different one won't. And I think that would create a situation where people lose faith in what it's for.
Alex, you love that clip, don't you?
I do love that clip. It's so true. Alex, you know, who's at fault? VAR? The referee, I think because the referee called it, VAR didn't overturn it. I don't think VAR would have given it if it went to VAR. He was sold a pup to a certain degree, wasn't he? But Goldberg Goldberg is spot on that, isn't he?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I feel like it's one of those where, for me, it isn't a clear and obvious mistake by the referee, because when the keeper comes out like that, it's not up to Havertz to sort of hurdle the challenge from the keeper. But we all know he left his leg trailing. But yeah, I think it's one of those where if the ref doesn't give the penalty on field, I can't see the VAR intervening and giving a penalty. But again, it's quite inconsistent, because we've seen some of those given, and we've seen some of these, for instance, in the Champions League, it was a similar one with Saka in the Bayern game, wasn't it? Where we didn't get the penalty. So yeah, some referees, they give those sort of penalties and others don't. And I mean, it's still a subjective game, football, and some of the rules are subjective. So yeah, it's difficult, but I don't think he's made a massive mistake, the referee. I can see why he's given the penalty, and I can see why the VAR's gone. It's not a clear and obvious mistake, because the keeper, he did challenge Havertz, and Havertz had to jump over his challenge, and he didn't. And that's why he probably gave the penalty. But yeah, I mean, I would have been annoyed if I was a Bournemouth fan. And we have been annoyed all those times when Harry Kane's done it, because he's bloody good at it. But yeah, clever from Havertz, and a nice penalty from Saka as well.
But Trevor, listen, Rice, Saliba, Saka, Trossard, Partey, Odegaard, Tomiyasu all had opportunities in that first half. Going in at 1-0 wasn't unjust. Whether it's debatable about the penalty or not. Oh, your light's gone.
Oh no, something's broken here. Hang on. Oh my lordy, what's going on?
We should have been 3-4-0 up, shouldn't we?
We should have.
I disagree with Alex. I disagree with Dan in the comments as well. I'm not putting Dan's comment up because it's about 500 words. But if Havertz doesn't drag his leg, the goalkeeper don't touch him. The goalkeeper's not gone near him. Havertz has instigated that touch. The goalkeeper hasn't instigated that touch. Havertz has instigated the touch by dragging his leg, right? And it's cheating, but it's been going on for years. And I'll take it if we're going to get it. I don't like it. Watching Kane do it every other week used to make me feel physically sick. But it is cheating, whether we like it or not. The goalkeeper doesn't touch Havertz unless Havertz moves his leg. The goalkeeper hasn't made contact with Havertz. Havertz has made contact with the goalkeeper by hanging his leg out. Anyway, we're 1-0 up. Who cares?
Del, is it cheating? Did we like when Neuer done it to Saka? And, you know,
I'll say the same thing as what I said a few minutes ago. They've allowed this to happen. If they've allowed this to happen and they give it once or twice or three or four times, they've got to give it every time, right? And it's the inconsistencies what gets us. Do I like it? No, I don't like it at all. If other people are going to do it, why shouldn't we? Someone put in the chat a moment ago, when other people do it, it's okay, and there's no thing around it. So why should we put so much focus on it when we do it? I don't think it was a penalty, no. But in this day and age, I think it is. I've got no problem with it.
Personally, I think it was a penalty. I just think it was really soft. And,
what's he talking shit for?
do you want me to do just for you? Just for you.
What you talking shit for?
I'm not. I do think I actually agree with Dan in the comments that, you know, contact was made, whether it was manufactured or not, that's up for the referee to decide. And he has got the back of a VAR to say, no, you got it wrong. And if VAR can't get that right, well, then clearly VAR is the issue, because Harry Kane and many others, Shearer and so on, have done it for years and years and years.
Matthew's nailed it here. Exactly, Matthew. That's exactly what happened.
The goalkeeper challenge didn't hinder Havertz in any way. He only snags his foot on the goalkeeper because he drags his foot along the floor. So what? Everybody else does it to us. It's the dark arts.
But that doesn't make it any more right.
Listen, if we were playing Fulham and it was we scored early against Fulham just after New Year's and they beat us 2-1, if it was the 90th minute and Havertz done that in the 90th minute, we got 2-2, we're in a very different situation now. And we're
exactly
loving that right now.
You're making two different points, right? You're making two different points. You're saying we'll accept it. Well, of course we'll accept it. We're Arsenal fans. We want them every game if we can get them, right? But that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make for a game of football. Like, it goes back to the best cheats win games that we were saying for years when Kane played for Tottenham. He's cheating, won them loads of games. It's not his football. He's cheating.
Guys, just to clarify, right, we're saying it's cheating, but the referee, the on-field referee, has seen that as a penalty. VAR has also reviewed that and seen that as a penalty. Two Premier League officials, be it VAR and on-field referee, have seen that as a penalty.
No, the VAR didn't have any reason. The VAR referee didn't have any reason to overturn the on-field decision. That was
correct.
Fact.
Yeah. So if they thought it wasn't a penalty, they would have said that's not a penalty, which says they agree with the decision of the on-field referee and says that's a penalty.
I'm not saying I agree with it. I don't think it says they agree with it. They come along and they're saying that, okay, I see where you're coming from. Yes, there's contact. Yes, it's a penalty. But if Coote hadn't
clear
gone
and
off,
obvious mistake.
Yeah.
See, look at this. Look what Dan's put here, right? Ashley Young and Carragher just said on Sky it's a penalty. So from what seems to be happening is that we're now saying that penalties are acceptable if they're won by the striker instead of being given away by the goalkeeper. It's part of the game. Penalties aren't given away by a goalkeeper in that instance. That penalty was won by the striker up to no good. And if it's a part of the game, then it's going to be a part of the game. That don't mean I have to enjoy it, and I don't.
I don't particularly like it. I like the honesty of the game, but unfortunately the honesty of the game is long gone and VAR doesn't help that situation. Look, went into the second half, and the second half were 1-0 ahead. And it took a good half hour, 70 minutes in, and Trossard again. Ole, ole. Trossard doubled our lead on the 70th minute. Alex, talk to us about Trossard. His performances over the last few games. He's now starting ahead of Jesus. He's got to start every game right through. And bearing in mind, we spoke on here probably 2 months ago saying Trossard's best coming off the bench. But now he's just growing into that role more and more and more.
Yeah, he's had his run of games now, and he's showed why Arteta's trusted in him, because he's done so well. And he just keeps improving. And I think last season he had something along the lines of 8 or 9 assists and 2 or 3 goals. And this season is the other way around. I think he's up to 11 goals now and 2 or 3 assists. So for me, he's the best finisher we've got at the club at the moment. Right foot, left foot, outside the box, inside the box. And I knew when that ball fell to him, when Declan Rice just poked it over to him, I knew he was going to put that in the back of the net, because that's one of his favorite finishes. And yeah, he's just been so good. And it's happened while Martinelli has had a bit of a drop in form. So, I mean, it's just good we've got other players that can step up when some of our players don't seem to be performing. Because we have to remember Martinelli was our top scorer last season. And I think he's only scored 4 or 5 goals this season. So, yeah, it's just brilliant that we've got players that can step up when some of our players are struggling to find form.
It's interesting you mentioned Martinelli. Dale, why do you reckon Martinelli isn't performing the way he did last season? Is that down to not having Zinchenko on the pitch and having that outlet?
I just think all players go through a bit of a dip in form. We're just very lucky that Trossard's hitting form as Martinelli's out of form. It was. I don't know if it was the last game or the one before where Martinelli came on and he missed what I'd expect him to put away 99 times out of 100, a one-on-one with a goalkeeper. It just goes to show that he's still a young lad. He's probably still learning parts of his trade. Does it affect him mentally when he gets dropped like this? Maybe not. We don't know. But it's all part of the growing process for me. And I'm not concerned about Martinelli in the slightest. I'm just enjoying Trossard in form whilst Martinelli's out of form. And long may it continue. I mean, as long as we've got competition in all those places and one person's in form, I don't think it matters who's putting the ball in the back of the net, truth be told.
Trevor, that's a really good point. There's a competition for spaces, competition for, you know, starting lineups. Trossard, Martinelli. Why do you think Trossard is working at the moment and Martinelli is not quite at a sweet spot?
I don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that they're both fine players and we have the luxury of being able to leave one out if he's not playing well and bring the other one in, who's equally, if not at the moment, more effective. I'm just really happy with the fact that we've not had to play a Martinelli that's been out of form because we've got this other player to come in. I thought when Martinelli came on against Tottenham, I didn't think he did a lot. I thought he was struggling a bit. But having said that, I don't think we've created as many chances down the left all season, have we, as we have down the right, you know?
Is that due to Zinchenko not being available? Because he, whilst defensively, people talk about him being suspect, going forward and creating those spaces for Martinelli, yeah. I think that might have a big influence. And I wonder if Timber might make a difference.
Again. My light's gone again. I'm going to leave it off. You'll have to put up with me like this.
Be in the meter.
Darkness again, ole ole.
I've got a horrible feeling it might be getting a bit warm, so I'm going to leave it up there. But no, yeah, maybe. But then Zinchenko, when he attacks more through the middle, doesn't he? So who knows? Who knows what goes on? I just like the bigger picture that we've got two players that can play equally as well in that position. I like the fact we've got three players that we play two of in the centre of midfield and it doesn't weaken us too much. I'm liking the fact that we've got, you know, we've got players now in the squad, not enough, I might add, that can come in and play just as well. And I think that's the 13 or 14 that we've seen over the last couple of three games are the players that we're definitely going to see at the Arsenal next season, hopefully. The others, who knows what's going to happen to him?
Alex?
Yeah, I just wanted to come in about the left-hand side and the right-hand side because, I mean, we are best down the right-hand side because we've got that connection with Odegaard, Saka and Ben White and they do so well together and they know each other inside and out. But I've just noticed the past couple of games, I've seen Odegaard shift more to the left-hand side and I think that might be a reason also why we've done better, or Trossard's done better. And if we go back to the incident where Havertz got the penalty, that was from Odegaard shifting over to the left-hand side and putting a through ball into Havertz. And also the same in the Chelsea game, the assist he made for Havertz in that game, that was where he came over to the left-hand side and played that ball in behind. So that might be a reason why we're doing better on the left and Trossard's performing better on the left-hand side and just generally us playing better is that Odegaard's starting to shift more on the left-hand side.
And a player who's had a huge influence on basically the forward line is Kai Havertz and Dan in his absence has sent us across a couple of graphics. So you got this one here, Havertz in 10 games, The influence he's having over the games. I wish Dan was here; he could actually explain these. I have seen them on Sky, and then the amount of distance he's travelling, the amount of work this guy is putting in. Kai Havertz, a player, Trevor, that people really doubted. And I know we've talked about this before about Kai Havertz and the influence and how he's grown into it. Carry on from the stuff we're talking about with Martinelli and Odegaard's position and cover Havertz as well, if you wouldn't mind, mate.
Do you know what? It's really interesting what Dan says. It's really, excuse me, what Alex says, in that Odegaard does seem to be moving across the top of the field a bit more than he was. And I wondered, Alex, if that could be tied in with the fact that Partey's playing, leaving Rice to go a bit more further forward and be a bit more expansive. And as a result of Rice being a bit more expansive, Odegaard's thinking, well, I can afford to go across the left a lot more, you know, and work across the whole of the forward line. I hadn't thought of that before you just mentioned it, but, you know, thinking about it now, I'm thinking, yeah, that could absolutely be the case. And if it is the case, what a great position we're in, you know? Just seeing them stats about the amount of ground that Havertz covers in a game, when you look at him, you wouldn't think he makes that much ground, would you? Because he lumbers about, you know, and you would never, ever have put him up at the top of there, above those other players there. Mind you would with Richarlison, because, my God, I've never known a player think he's so good when he's not. It's embarrassing. Someone needs to take Richarlison into a side room somewhere and say, look, mate, you think you're prime Pele, but actually you're like prime National League striker at best. You know, sort yourself out, mate. It's hilarious.
He's not a League Two striker, is he? Like Haaland?
No, he's below Haaland. He's below Haaland. Yeah. But going back to that really important point Alex made, and it made me expand a bit and think about it. Maybe that's what it is, Alex. Maybe there's like a knock-on effect of Partey's holding the line in front of a solid back four, which means Rice can be a little bit more inventive, which in turn means that Odegaard's got to make a bit of room for Rice at times, you know, because Rice is going to be forward.
Yeah. Because he is more dynamic than Jorginho, isn't he? More mobile, Partey. He does cover a bit more ground.
Yeah, of course he is. And that doesn't mean that Jorginho hasn't done a sterling job, by the way.
No, he's been brilliant.
Yeah.
Dale, Havertz is a number nine. This is the stat that Dan sent through to us. So he's played 10 games at number nine and 26 games in other positions. We've conceded less goals. He's done more longer passes. Is he the target man? Is he our out-and-out number nine, or nine and a half or whatever? Talk to us about Havertz.
Nine and a half is probably a good way to put it. I still do think we need a striker. But that being said, I'm very happy with Kai Havertz at the moment. One thing I like about Kai is when you watch him, he doesn't just sit on that last defender like a lot of traditional strikers do. He drops back. He'll drop back and almost kind of drop into that midfield position, which allows players like Odegaard and Martinelli or Trossard or Saka to make those runs. And we're seeing quite a bit of that this season. I like his work rate. I wouldn't have put him top of that chart, but I'm not surprised to see him up there because he does work hard. He's always backwards and forwards. He's just not the striker people are used to seeing, as I say, people are used to seeing sitting on that last man. He's not that type of striker. I don't think he ever will be, but his work rate can't be questioned at all.
Just a question for you boys. Dale, you just mentioned that you still think we need a number nine, a new striker. Would you bring in a starting number nine and bench Havertz, or would you want just a backup striker?
It's a very good question. I think your striker depends on your opposition a lot of the time as well, depending on what competition and what opposition you're playing. For example, if you're playing against a Man City, where they're quite dominant in the back, you're going to want quite a dominant centre-forward like a Kai Havertz, who's going to put himself up in the air. Whereas I don't think against other teams you need that. I don't know the answer to that question, in all honesty. I'd like to see somebody come in. I think whoever comes in has to earn their stripes. I wouldn't drop Kai Havertz because he's done nothing wrong to be dropped. We could bring in Mbappe. He's still got to earn that spot, is the reality of things. And anybody who's not willing to earn that spot is the wrong striker for me anyway. So I think regardless of who we bring in, I'd still continue with Kai.
I think you can accommodate an out-and-out striker up top, drop Kai Havertz back into the Granit Xhaka position because now his confidence is back in where it was shot to pieces when he arrived. And then if Partey does depart, then you drop Rice back into the six role with Jorginho covering. So that it will allow you to accommodate Rice, Havertz, and a striker. Trevor, what's your thoughts?
Slightly different in that I've not liked what I've seen from Havertz when he's played deeper. I've not liked it at all. But is that because, I've got to be careful here because I don't want anyone to think I'm getting on his back. Is that because when he plays Havertz deep, he plays Jesus through the middle up front, and we all know that Jesus doesn't give the goals to games ratio that we need to be a Premiership winning season team. We've got to be honest about that. Jesus is a fantastic player. His foot skills are amazing, but he doesn't give you the goals to games ratio. So we've only seen Kai playing behind Jesus. So it's a little bit unknown, really, isn't it? I like the way Kai Havertz has grown and grown and grown into the role playing right up top. But I also think if we bought in an out-and-out striker who's going to give us the goal-to-game ratio that we want, would Havertz look better a bit deeper then? Quite possibly. Quite possibly. We don't know the answer. But as it is, going with what we've got at the moment, I don't want to see Havertz playing deep. I want to see Havertz playing up top. That's where he's most efficient.
I've lost my screen a second. I don't even know where mouse is or nothing.
If you lost your screen, try looking where your marbles are because you lost them years ago. So
trust you for supportive comments on there, Trev. Listen, we talked about the referee having a good or bad day or whatever, but there was a slightly controversial decision that went to VAR. The visitors thought a goal by Semeno was agreed, but Peter Banks agreed with the on-field referee, David Coote, that Raya was pushed. And this is the moment where he felt that Raya was pushed. But following watching Match of the Day, and the Bournemouth manager wasn't very happy about this, that Saliba had given a little tug on somebody. Alex, talk to me about this situation. Do you feel that that was the right decision to disallow the goal, the dark arts?
As an Arsenal fan, it was absolutely the right decision.
Absolutely, absolutely. But let's try and be a little, objective.
I think putting myself in the ref's position, what a difficult decision to make as well, because there's so many things going on. I think it's much like the penalty. It's one of those where if he'd just given the goal, I don't think the VAR would have gone, you've made a clear and obvious mistake here, mate. But I think he's right to give the foul because Solanke, he's not looking at the ball. He's looking at Raya and he knows what he's doing, going in and just giving him a little nudge. And we saw a similar one where it wasn't a goalkeeper.
He's looking at the ball there, Alex.
Yeah, but before that, he just looked at Raya and he just went in Raya and he knew what he was doing. It wasn't like he was looking at the ball all of the time. But we saw it in the Villa-Chelsea game where the late winner for Chelsea was disallowed for a similar thing where it wasn't with the keeper, but it was an outfield player where they just got a nudge in the back. I think he's got away with it big time, like Matthew says in the comments, because he didn't really deal with it well, that one, Raya. It was a bad punch for him, and that punch led to the goal being scored. So, yeah, I think we got away with one there, and we were quite lucky that the ref made the decision he did, because it could well have been a goal and nobody would have really complained, I think.
It could. Trevor, Golden Glove holder, David Raya, clearly vindicated Arteta's decision to make him number one ahead of Aaron Ramsdale, a fan's favourite. He's had a couple of clangers, but overall he's done all right. Did he have a clanger on that day?
I don't think he should have been coming for the ball. I think there was a defender there that could have done that work for him. But at the end of the day, we're going right back to where we started the show, Ferg, aren't we, mate? With referees' interpretations and VAR interfering or not interfering. So let's just say it weren't a goal. It was disallowed. It's all over Red Rover. Move on. Unlucky Bournemouth. We you know, as for Raya winning the... I had an interesting thought the other day. I was sitting there reading an Arsenal book, right? And actually, Bob Wilson was mentioned, right? And I was reading about Bob Wilson and sitting there thinking to myself, with the defence we now have, right? And this is an interesting one for you lot to get your comments, right? Looking at the defence we now have, if Ramsdale had continued to play all season, does he win a Golden Glove with that defence in front of him? I'll give you my answer first, and this isn't picking on any of them or taking sides. I think yes. I think
agree.
Ramsdale wins a Golden Gloves. The same, because that defence is amazing.
Ben White, Gabriel, Saliba, and whoever. Okay, Zinchenko, we know, has his frailties in that area, but those three alone, and it generally is, with the inverted player, it generally is a three at the back. I think Ramsdale could equally hold his own on there. Listen, we're fast running out of time. Dale, I'm going to talk to you about the goal that wasn't. What a bloody goal it was. Have a look at this from... look, I'll play it. You'll fall in love. I know you will. Our number six, the King of Brazil. He was absolutely gutted. We jumped around because it was just a scream. We didn't know where it came from. We just saw the scream of a ball coming in.
I was the opposite. I said straight away it was going to be disallowed. I thought it was offside. When I first see it, I thought it was offside. And I was not him. And when obviously the cross came in, and I was like, I was still jumping around celebrating the goal. But I said straight away it's offside. And it was closer than what I thought it was. It was much closer than what I thought it was. And it was literally inches, wasn't it? It wasn't a lot at all. But my first thought was it was offside. And I was gutted for him because that would have... I was almost as excited about that as when... Do you remember when Partey hit the bar against Spurs? I was excited as that. I was praying that it was going to be given, but I didn't think it was. Obviously, I had the benefit of seeing it from a TV angle rather than in the stadium, but my first thoughts were it was offside.
Trevor, you're slightly away from my area. You're up slightly higher and everything else. Did you think it was in?
I was drunk. I can't even remember it.
You couldn't see the goal.
I'd slipped out and had a couple more ciders by this time. I'm like, I'm all over this show, aren't I? You know, I only had that game, and then we've got Man United away and Everton at home, and then it's a summer with a beautiful wife, so I'm getting a few beers in at football while I can, and then it's a few beers with a beautiful wife through the summer. But I honestly, when I saw it on the telly, I thought, I don't remember that.
Oh, I do. I do. I vividly remember it. And then just after that, we had... Alex Rice. Declan Rice. Talk to me about Declan Rice. David Moyes was talking about Declan Rice post-match and saying he's conceded, their team have conceded quite a number of large deficits. And what was the reason? And the reason was Declan Rice, the best midfielder in England. And he's an Arsenal player. We've bought and paid for him now with our Champions League qualification as far as we've got. So we've got our money back, 105 million in prize money just from the Champions League alone. That goal was sweet. But that he was potent throughout the game.
Yeah, and we really did get him half price, didn't we? He's just been immense this season. I think when he came in, I would have been happy if he'd played like he'd played without the goals and assists he's created this season, because he's so good without them. And I mean, how he got the energy, how he still had the energy left to make that run in the 95th or 96th minute when he'd been running so much throughout the game, I don't know how I think if he wasn't a football player, he could have been a long distance runner, because he's got such an engine. Now he's up to 15 goals and assists in the Premier League this season, which is just incredible. And he's much exceeded my expectations. He had 4 goals and 2 assists last season for West Ham, and that was his best season goals and assist wise last season. So up to 8 goals, 7 assists now. And he just keeps on improving, and he's improved ever since Partey's come in. And I like the way he plays further up in the field, both off the ball and on the ball. He could have scored early on in the game as well, in first half, where Havertz, brilliant striker play by Havertz, he just nodded it down for him, and it was just wide. But yeah, I mean, he just seems on. He's just so good. I love him, Declan Rice. I mean, we're so lucky we've got him.
Mm. Listen, we finished the game 3-0. I thought it was going to be 2-0. And the title race continues. I don't know why they put Liverpool in that, but Liverpool in theory can. They've got Tottenham at home, Villa away, and Wolves at home. Arsenal were away, as Trevor said, to Manchester United at the weekend. And then we got Everton at home. And in the meantime, Manchester City, who are a point behind us with a game in hand, have 2 away games at Fulham and Tottenham, and then home to West Ham. Trevor, before we go in to ask your opinion, Trevor, we've got 361 people watching right now. If you like what we do, jump over onto YouTube, click onto Guns and Ribbons on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, or Guns and Ribbons, yeah, and Guns and Yellow Ribbons on YouTube and all of the social media. Click on the like and subscribe and go from there. Trevor, go on, go.
Oh, Annabelle, I'd forgotten this as well. I was only up there for 5 seconds, and that steward was like a rocket at me. He was.
You were trying to take a video because we were trying to get a Kevin Campbell song going.
Yeah.
Because listen, any Arsenal fans who from long ago, well, not long ago, and then not 30 years ago, since we won in Parma, or no, in Copenhagen, we won the European Cup. And Kevin Campbell was instrumental to get us into that final. Kevin hasn't been great over the last couple of months. And Sophie Nicolau from the Highbury squad and Kevin, Sophie reached out and said, come on, let's try and get a Kevin Campbell song going for him. And we tried to do that, Trevor. Unfortunately, the crowd's different at a home game, isn't it? And it's hard to get it going.
Look, mate, the crowds at this time of the season, that crowd before the game against Bournemouth, they had, I honestly believe they had that young lad on their minds. They were determined that they were going to make sure the 14th minute was something to remember. They had loads of other stuff going on, mate. It was very emotional, very passionate. I've nothing more to say about it, really. You know, we all wish Kev all the best, don't we? And he's making a recovery, which we're pleased to hear. And we all sing his name. He knows we sing his name. And he knows that every single Arsenal fan that sets foot in that Emirates Stadium, that is of an age to remember him, loves him. He knows that. Don't you worry about that. Yeah. He knows that.
Sure. Trevor, United away then. So you're going up to United. I'm unlikely to be on the go, but still slightly hopeful. Manchester United, let's just say that they haven't been consistent, and we hope their inconsistencies continue on Sunday. What's your feelings on this game? Would you change much with the lineup? Would you change much about what we're doing? And where do you see a threat from them?
Look, Fergie, how many times since we've been really good mates have you asked me what I know about the opposition team? And I say, I don't know. But look, the only worry I've got in my head is that over the last few seasons, we have on occasions played really, really well at Old Trafford. And I mean really well. And we've still not managed to get a result, you know. But if you look at the sides, look at the lineups, I think we'll go with the same team. I can't see us changing the team. And when you look at Man United, yeah, they've been up and down. They remind me a bit of of us of a few years ago. We're not going to lose another game in my head. We're gonna beat Man United and we're gonna beat Everton, right? I'm as confident as I can be going to a place like Old Trafford. We're going to talk about City in a minute, and I know that. But I've got to get it in here now to sow the seed of what's coming. I don't think City are going to lose a game either, Ferg. You know? When
they
you look
need
at...
to draw. They I just mean, need to draw.
I know, but come on. Look right. Now, we spoke about it the other night, Alex. When we played Tottenham, Tottenham's tactics from corners was horrendous. We were just putting it to the far post. They couldn't see where our guys were coming from. Postecoglou didn't learn from it all game, and we scored goals. So I didn't see the Chelsea game that they got beat at Chelsea, but I put the game on last night. And Stone Crows, first corner, Liverpool load the back post. All the Tottenham players are in front of them and haven't got a clue where the players are that they might have to pick up. Postecoglou, at the moment, is showing a tactical nous, a skill, a tactical skill awareness of someone that's managing on a Sunday morning. I can see it, and I'm not a coach. I'm not tactically aware. But when I saw it last night, was it last night or whenever it was against Liverpool, I thought, oh my God, Tottenham are still zonal marking all their players in front of four Liverpool players. They don't know where they're going or what they're going to do. Tottenham couldn't beat Man City with 15 players on the field, right? 15 players on the field. Then they've got West Ham, Man City, Ferg. Now, I'm quite pleased to see Moyes go today because a manager leaving often lifts the players, don't it? So who knows? But they've got a job on. And then we've got Fulham. Fulham on their day can beat anybody.
Fulham at home are decent.
Can't see it. But
can be decent.
I'm so pleased we've mentioned Tottenham and these tactics because I'll tell you what, if they ever say they're bringing Ange Ball to Arsenal, I'm off. I'm packing my season ticket in, right? I'm never going to an away game again. I'm not even going to watch it on a telly. If we get someone that is quality at the Arsenal, I'm never watching the game again. I'm going down Boston United and watching a better manager manage a decent team there. Right,
Dale, on that point, like, you know, I've had just some inside information from somebody who's tactically astute and so on, and probably confirming what Trevor is talking about. Tottenham are quite open at the back, aren't they?
Massively. You know what, though, right? I've got a funny feeling. I can't see City losing, just throw it out there, right? But I've got a funny feeling that there's been so much focus on Spurs from set pieces, right? So much focus. And that's a brilliant photo. Like Ange Postecoglou said himself before the Arsenal game, I'm not fussed about set pieces. Set pieces aren't all that. And he's made himself look so silly saying that, considering how bad they've been. They've got to change it. Their last three games, they've been so, so bad from set pieces. They simply must change it. And that's what I'm holding on to, right? I'm holding on to there's got to be that little something there that goes, the day they're going to change it, the day it's going to work is against City. Now, I'm under the same belief as the majority, right? City aren't going to lose another game. But as Alex said, they don't need to lose. They've just got to draw. Are Fulham capable on their day at home of taking points off City? Yes. Do I think they'll do it? No. Are Spurs on their day at home capable of taking points off City? Recent performances says yes. Exactly. So that's what I'm holding on to. It's not over till it's over. But you know what? Forget Spurs. Forget City. Let's just go to Old Trafford and focus on what we're doing. And I'm going to be the first to throw it out there, right? I'm going to say we're going to beat Man United 3-1 at Old Trafford.
Yeah, Alex. If you look at here, Hente has put up, we've won the last 20 games, only won 2, drawn 5, and lost 13 at Old Trafford. When you look at it like that, the cold...
We've often not played badly there.
No, we haven't. Look,
Yeah.
Look at last season, September last year, and poor referee and decisions, Paul Tierney, and Odegaard's goals disallowed, and then we chucked everything at it. Substitutions were poor by Arteta, but we played really, really well, and by chasing the game, we lost 3-1. And yeah. I just hope we can keep our heads together and just go for it. Alex, thoughts?
Yeah, I think United, they've got another clueless manager like big old Ange. I don't like Erik ten Hag, and I think he's a terrible manager. And fortunately for us, they're quite unlucky with injuries at the moment. So it seems like they've only got one fit centre-back, and that's Johnny Evans. Harry Maguire's out for the season, and so are Varane and Lisandro Martinez. So they're struggling at the back. And I've seen now that Bruno Fernandes, he's not even in the squad for they're playing right now against Crystal Palace. So, I mean, he's been in good form for the last couple of weeks, so he's probably not playing either. So, I mean, everything's telling me that we should win this comfortably. But like Hent has pointed out, we've struggled at winning games at Old Trafford for the past 20 years. But this one, we have to win. We're in such good form. We've got no injuries. They've been struggling this season, and we're just a much better team. And like Dale, I can see us winning 3-1 or 3-0 even. There's just nothing really worrying me about Manchester United at the moment.
The only thing that's worrying me about Man United, I agree with you, I think we can win. And I would probably go a 2-0. But the only thing that's worrying me, my brothers are Man United fans. They'll just do something just to wind me up. It's United. But Rich has got a great point. Regardless of how it's gone on, Trevor, then you can come in. Regardless of what happens, if we win our last two games, and it is down to those couple of points we dropped against Fulham, or dropping 6 points to Villa, the very few moments that I haven't enjoyed. This season has been a great ride, Trevor.
Yeah. Oh, look, right. I was going to talk about Fergus's fall. He's just gone to empty his bag, by the way. But Arnie, a good friend of the show, just put a comment. I can't find it now, that City will draw one game. And Arnie, you probably know we have a little private message facility going while we're talking to you guys. So we all know who's going to go next and what we're going to do. And Fergus has just private messaged me, Arnie, that if City do draw a game and we win the league, next time Fergus sees you, he's giving you a full on kiss on the lips, Arnie. So you need to be a bit careful, son. So watch out for him. But look, right. I think we're going to beat Man United. I think we're going to beat Man United comfortably, right? But we need to take our chances, because the Man United Arsenal is different gravy. It's been for donkey's years. It's been the game of the season, right? And it's getting back that way now. And Man United will be up for it. But if we play to our best, it doesn't matter how up Man United are. We are better, aren't we? You know, we are a better football team. And I think I agree. I reckon it could be about 4-0 to the Arsenal if we play to our very best. Our very best. And just before I shut up and let Ferg back, I hope you've washed your hands, Fergus. Just before I shut up and...
Words with you. I got these earphones in. I heard every word. Arnie, I'm not kissing no bloke.
You know. But the fact of the matter is, right, and we're going to have a big review. Oh, it's gone again. We're going to have a big review at the end of the season of how it's gone. But what a ride this team has given us, eh? What a fantastic journey they've took us on this season. Absolutely amazing. I can't fault any of them. None of them.
Mate, we've had this. All these different experiences. Okay, that's a European travel, but we've had so many good days. You know, how many football fans would kill to have the season that we've had? It's been absolutely outstanding. But you know what the really, really horrible thing is? We've scored the most goals, conceded the least goals, won the most games, been more consistent at home, this, that, and the other. And if we don't win it, it's just going to feel like such a tragedy. Anybody want a final word? Alex, have your final word, then we're going to close down, mate.
Yeah, it would feel like a tragedy. But like you said, we've had such a good season, and there's just nothing you can do against City when they're playing like, I mean, looking, we've lost one game, haven't we, in 2024, and it's still not enough to beat City. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully we can improve if we don't win it and win it next season, because we're just nearly there. We're just nearly there. But yeah, I've loved every moment of this season. Some of the pictures you just showed, this has by far been my favorite year being an Arsenal supporter. And yeah, going to all these different matches, home and away, and in Europe, Munich and Seville, down in Brighton as well, meeting new people. Yeah, it's just been a laughter season. And like you said, I think many other fans would be jealous of the season we've had. So yeah, just enjoy it and get behind the boys for the last couple of games and just enjoy that we're playing so good football. It's beautiful to watch at the moment. So absolutely. Yeah, let's go to Old Trafford and win.
Absolutely. Alex, you've nailed it. And just remember, Fergus, just remember, Dal, just remember, Alex, that if we get second place at the end of the season, we're going to be gutted, devastated after the final game of the season. The other lot from Middlesex have been gutted and devastated since last October, you know? So what a ride they've given us.
In fairness,
didn't they win the league in October?
Yeah, they would. Yeah, after beating Sheffield United.
That's right. Yeah, I thought they won the league back in October.
We've won the league. Let me take my baby on the field. We've only played 10 games.
Dale, final word, mate, and then we're going to close down.
Yeah, there's nothing I can say what hasn't already been said. I just want to, honestly, this season has been, seeing some of them photos now, it's been incredible. Absolutely incredible. Home, away, European adventures, it's been unreal. And just glad to be on this journey with you guys, right? Not just you guys on the screen here, but these guys in the chat as well. People we see at match days. Let's just enjoy it, right? We've got to do our part for the last few games. Those going to Manchester, I don't even need to say be loud and proud, because I know you already are. You've been the best away fans all season. All we can do is go to the Everton game, last game at the Emirates, and just hope we're still in it, right? Let's just hope at that point there, City could have dropped points and we're going to have a party on that final day of the season. So, yeah, I'm up for it.
Two-day party. It's going to be a two-day party if we win it.
Oh, yes.
It's going on till Monday night. At least. All these pictures you've shown, Ferg, I'm in the mood for a mojito now. I'm going to get off here after and get myself a mojito.
Oh, should Arsenal win the Premier League, there will be a parade on Monday the 20th starting at 5 p.m. You have got no hope of get anywhere near the stadium if that happens. Look, those details are disclosed just to give people some advance notice, but they also have the statutory requirement to publish them so they can apply for road closures. Nobody's getting above themselves. I think we all know where we are. We're waiting for a slip up somewhere along the line, and we'll see how it is. Listen, 6 years ago today, one of our greatest managers left the club in Arsene Wenger. And if you just see where the club has come from the greatness that Arsene Wenger and Herbert Chapman and his 4-4-1 George Graham has taken us over the various eras of Arsenal Football Club. We're now in this position again where we've left toxicity, we've left all the infighting and everything else to have this thing where we might finish second, but we're all united and behind the club and just proud of what Mikel Arteta and his boys are doing.
Alice,
and you know what? That song, which is it's in its first season, has just depicted of where we've come to. Trevor, you love Trevor time. Go on, close up, and then we're done.
Mate, we've covered so much tonight, and
We have.
We covered it after the start of the show when we had to do what we had to do. We spoke about a wonderful football club, and they've not let us down this season, have they? Yeah? They've not let us down. I go to the Emirates every week. I go to away games every other week, and I'm full of hope. And most of the time, expectation. And that's what they've given us. That's what they've given us. And we're only going to get better, aren't we? Eh? We're only going to get better. You know, wow, be excited. Be excited. Oh, come on. I'm going for a mojito. Close this show.
Thanks for listening to Guns and Yellow Ribbons, an Arsenal podcast by Arsenal fans for Arsenal fans. Follow us on Facebook at Guns and Yellow Ribbons or Twitter at Guns and Ribbons. And remember to rate and review us too. Up the Arsenal.
Listen, if you like what we do, 427, looking at us on various platforms, go over to YouTube and subscribe. Up the Arsenal. Fuck the Spurs. Come on, Arsenal.
It's mojito time.